Yo.
Yo.
How you doing?
Fantastic. How are you?
I've been in from work 15 minutes. It's been a good day.
Wow.
Great fun. But anyway, enough about me. What's happening?
Not much. It's rainy.
Yeah.
And let's just hope the rain clears up for next weekend. It's looking okay, but you never know.
We'll see. When Wes says next weekend, listener, what he means is vegan camp out, because we're recording this in mid-July, although we're gonna publish it in August. So that's what we're hoping for next weekend.
Yeah. I just had myself a lentil chili for dinner. And
Ooh.
after, I mean, this is a while back now. After Hannah's episode, I must have put approximately 5 kilograms of nooch on top of it.
I
I thought,
forgot about Hannah's nooch obsession. Yes. Five kilo.
every time I pick nooch up, I think, Hannah really liked nooch.
Yes. Oh, I haven't seen Hannah for ages. Yes, I'll have to ask her about her nooch and wild swimming. Good. Shall I tell you about today's guest?
Yeah, why
Today's guest was recommended to us by our friend Aldis in Iceland.
not? Oh, yeah.
And our guest today is Chris, who runs Loki Foods, who are a plant-based seafood producer in Iceland.
Wow.
So, what we are going to talk to him about is how he's getting into the market there, and how he's changing the way people eat.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be good. I mean, where's that place in Scandinavia that do the whaling?
I think that's all of Scandinavia.
Is that all of Scandinavia, is it?
Especially Iceland and Norway. And oh, are you thinking of Seaspiracy?
No. I'm thinking of when they have that festival, didn't they, where they go and
Yes. That's the
for
Faroe
a
Islands.
Faroe Islands for a giggle, for a laugh. Let's go out on boats and capture
Yeah.
some fish
Kill a
and,
load of whales.
yeah, just for the hell of
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Very disappointing.
it's not much to report, I'll be honest, though.
No. Listener, our guest is Loki Foods, and this introduction has definitely been low key.
Yes, loving it. Loving it.
I'll tell you what, if you want to give us something to talk about, why don't you drop us an email?
Yes, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Yes. Send us an email to howiveganpodcast@gmail.com.
Or if that's too old school for you, just add us on our social media. We're on pretty much all the platforms. Just look for How I Vegan Podcast and send us a message. Tell us how amazing we are. Ask us any question you'd. Maybe we could do a Q&A. If people wrote in with questions,
Yeah.
we could do a Q&A episode. That'd be nice.
That's a good shout. Yeah,
Yeah.
why not? Send us your questions. You've set that one up now, Wes.
Damn.
Send us your questions and we'll answer them. Do you know what? We might do it as an episode, or we might do it as an Instagram live.
Maybe.
We might. We're not making any promises.
No. I mean, that's assuming our listenership actually listen to us. I still think it's bizarre. I think it's all made up.
One person somewhere listening again and again and again.
Yeah. Someone that travels the world a lot.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
But thank you to all of those that do listen because it is amazing. Do.
We love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I still
We
haven't
love it.
listened to anything.
Yeah, at least somebody does.
Oh, dear.
Oh, funny, funny.
Tell you what, I was saying to you today, wasn't I, about the weather?
Yes.
When we met in person about the weather, and I'm just looking out the window thinking, it's not even summer rain, it's just crap.
No,
It's
shit, isn't it?
just horrible.
It's more like autumn. It's like
Yes.
early autumn when it's still warm, but it rains. It's like that.
Yeah.
Except it's July.
Yeah.
Like all of Europe is, about 50 degrees. There's wildfires all over the world, there's droughts, and yet it's pissing it down here all the time and it's
Yeah.
cold. We've got the shitty end of the stick there, I think.
Yeah, it's like I said to you, it gets on my nerve because there's blatantly something happening with the weather and the I don't know, the nonsense of it all, how hot it's getting, how I don't remember it having storms regularly, like days upon end.
Yeah, that's a good show.
I remember we'd get one storm a year in about August when I was like back in the 80s, if you remember them days.
Oh, in the olden days.
In the olden days. And now, like a couple of weeks ago, it was thunderstorm every day for about a week. And
Yes.
now the weather's a crap. And it winds me up because if only there was something we could do about it to make a difference. There we go.
Oh, what do you suggest? What are you thinking of?
Don't know, I think if we all bought electric cars, that would work. Or if we all recycled all of our recyclables, that would work as well, obviously, because that's working, isn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
good shout. We'll give it a go.
Wonder if there's anything. Wonder if
And
there's
paper
anything.
straws and
Yeah.
shorter showers.
How are you guys doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Thanks for joining us. We are very grateful. Our mutual friend, I don't know if we can say friend, but we're going to go with friend. Our mutual friend Aldis told us that we should get in touch with you when she joined us in the autumn, because as she said, you're changing seafood, I think is the word that she said, through your company Loki Foods. First of all, let me say welcome to the pod, Chris, who's the CEO of Loki, is that right? Yes. Okay.
Co-creator.
Co-created. Okay. Awesome. So you're in Iceland, but you don't sound Icelandic, and I
No.
don't know if that's a Icelandic name either.
No. It would be with a K, not a CH, and it would be Christopher,
Yeah.
but not Christopher. No, I'm originally from the US. I'm originally from the Boston area, but I've spent a third of my life in Iceland so far.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Awesome. So, what's the story behind Loki Foods then? What's going on there? What's the background?
Background. So this idea is quite old. A good friend of mine, and actually one of our first investors, the first investor, he'd be poking me if I didn't say that. His name's Ryan Bethencourt. He's CEO and founder of Wild Earth, which is probably the fastest growing plant-based pet food or dog food company. So if you don't know this about pet food, actually dogs are their four or five main allergies are essentially meat, dairy, chicken, and fish. And what are they fed? Meat, dairy, chicken, and fish.
No way.
And so if they developed a proprietary blend of plant-based nutritional profile coming from different types of plant, not just plant proteins. And the dogs are actually living to be substantially longer. So Ryan has been a good friend of mine for many years. And we were working on a project that didn't actually pan out, but during that time we got to finally work together on something and talk about it. And the way that the food system is, well, everything, not just outside of food, everything needs to be slowly, or I would say rapidly, replaced with more sustainable options in order to enable the planet to regenerate itself so that we can inhabit it as essentially one of the higher forms of consciousness on this planet. if that's going to be allowed when I think it wants us to, as in we want us to. And so, but when we consider food, basically every single input that is animal-based doesn't resonate with that, and therefore essentially needs to be replaced. And so doesn't mean necessarily getting away from animal-based derivatives, but essentially either fermenting them or cultivating them. But certainly, you know, if you look at the inputs to the food system, pharmaceuticals, cosmetics, cars, whatever, the inputs of essentially being need to be plant-based fermentation or cultivated. And so when you kind of understand that, you're like, well, crap, we have a lot to do. We have a lot to do. And I don't think we have a lot of time to do it. And so what this means is that basically every single input needs to have innovation in and around it to replace it. And then at the same time, that needs to be done in essentially every single corner of the world. And so that's, you know, our first bucket or first sector is we could consider as alternative seafood. And we're starting from the Nordics and Iceland. However, we're global and we're more than seafood. But when you consider the alternative seafood space, it's not enough for just 10 or 12 players globally to exist, because that's not going to meet the demand, because seafood is such a wide and vast thing. And there's going to be essentially 10 billion mouths to feed. And so when you know that, well, crap, you got a lot to do. And so Iceland's late claim to fame, one of its claims to fame is seafood. So no one consumes more seafood per capita than Iceland. And it's essentially a third of our GDP. And 80, 100 years ago was basically all of it. You know, it was pre-GDP. It was just sustenance, right? Because there was no globalization until the turn of the century, or the last turn of the century, when the World War started. And so, you know, it's roughly now a third of our GDP, and half of that GDP is coming from white fish, and predominantly cod, as we know, in the North Atlantic, and many cultures have called cod white gold. And well, what happens when the temperatures around the oceans of Iceland change by a degree and a half? Cod migrates away. And so that means we have to find other options, scramble to it. Obviously, other types of species will migrate in, but whitefish is sort of a pinnacle cornerstone of seafood globally. And it's really what drives, I would say, Iceland's seafood market. And so there are many reasons for the genesis of this company. But that is kind of an obvious glaring one. It's just like, okay, we need right now the options for something that replaces the high functionality, the taste, texture, the nutrition, the few kind of key important nutritional aspects of whitefish. There's not really a product that exists currently basically anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And so we kind of sought out with the idea of, all right, let's start with our first product of something that mimics the functionality of cooking fish in the kitchen, so that if you're used to kind of cooking fish in a certain way with a certain sauce and you fry it a certain way, it's unbreaded. Well, we want to say, hey, just put this in, right? And rather than being like, this is breaded, you have to put it in the oven, and therefore then you have to kind of work around this kind of fish finger concept. And at the same time, having struggling to have the same nutritional composition as you expect from fish, obviously without any of the massive externalities, the microplastics, the carcinogens, the worms, the bones, the endless list of things. Yeah, it'd be weird. It would be weird. and so, yeah, we started off with that idea, and we started, the company began about early 2022. The idea is about 2.5-3 years old. Now we're here about to launch our first product, which is a white fish analog. So it's a white fish fillet. It's unbreaded. You can bread it, you can deep fry it, you can make fish tacos out of it, you can make fish fingers, you can do what you want with it, really. That is something that mimics the taste, texture of white fish, also is of, like, you know, the whole flakiness of this, of the flesh that people desire so greatly. And but also nutritional composition too. So it's about 17% protein. Cod itself is about 18%, I believe. And it's also low in sodium, low in carbohydrates, low in fat, but also like high in healthy fats, and very few ingredients to that. So that's that's sort of the genesis of the company. The veganism aspect is predates that significantly for me. Yeah.
Okay. So what's the, without giving it all away, but what's the a kind of basic ingredient, if you like? Because then some of the fish substitutes that we have here are, I think probably most of them are soya based. I think.
Yeah. It's a blend of two different types of protein currently. And that's a pea protein and a wheat protein. And we have algae and some sustainable plant-based oil in it to kind of the taste and the texture, the binding elements, and then also the nutritional profile. But it's not many ingredients.
Brilliant. And 2 years or two, 3 years, did you say? Like in sort of in the planning and the sort of refining, that's... That's a decent amount of time spent making sure it's just right.
Yeah, and it was about 12, 15 months in the kitchen, in the lab, whatever you want to call it, with myself and Bjorn, who created the company with me, who's a food scientist at the University of Iceland. And so we have something that is we visualize and manifested exactly sort of what we have. Fantastic. So it's quite exciting. Yeah.
What does like the community think about it? Have you had any sort of feedback on it?
So we've done some testing we've done a lot of testing actually, from head chefs to vegans, to vegetarians, to those with fish allergies, which is a growing number. And then also just to those that have, you know, no consideration of reducing their intake. And we've received very, very high marks. And so when we look, then we hone into the vegan community, we see that there's a lot of impatience for it. we kind of announced ourselves, and then very quickly we became a household name within the vegan community. And then also we're within 3 months of 3 or 4 months of launching the company, we were on national news and they did a 7-minute segment on us and the state of the ocean. Yeah. And so I actually, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to start this company was I wanted to align so much of my fire and passion with also making a dent and helping to with my flow of creation, helping to change the greater flow of the ocean, you know, proverbially and for us. And being able to talk about it as my day job, more or less, is essentially why I wanted to do this, right? To have that, and also to make, so, you know, I don't necessarily believe that products themselves convert people, nor do I think it even makes them reduce their intake. But I think they should be there when they should be there as like a reward for making the conversion. Mm. But then also they should be there to spark the narrative, right? Yeah. And so, you know, if you're having a fish dinner with your family and you're not eating fish anymore, but your parents still are, and you bring it home for them to try, then, you know, that's part of it, right? Or they see it in the grocery store, and it's kind of part of the rhythm to it.
That's really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you have a background in food production then, or what was it that led you into this world?
Yeah, no. I have my bachelor's is in psychology, and I have a master's and PhD in public health and epidemiology. So no, but I've spent a lot of my time in business development and marketing within life sciences, so health tech and health tech, biotech, you know, kind of across the board. But I've been vegan since 2006, 2007. I stopped eating animals in 2002. So I was 14-ish then. And I don't come from a family of vegetarians or vegans. My mom's vegan now, but when I was a kid, she wasn't. I came from a very classic, poor, lower class, you eat TV dinners because there's nothing else you can afford type of thing, you know.
So how did that all start? What made you change that?
For me, I grew up, I said it, like I grew up outside of Boston, spent the first 10 years of my life in this like this tri-state area, which is like Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine. So I grew up on the ocean. I've kind of always been close to the ocean. I moved to Florida when I was about 10, and but as a kid, actually as a kid, as like a toddler, I actually have a very vivid memory of being fed lobster and seafood. It was actually the first solid food that I started eating was lobster, because it's just you could catch it and it was just there. And then I actually had this, I have a very strong visceral memory of kind of pushing back on fish and sea and lobster when I kind of realized what it was. And so that was the last I ever ate of it. I actually don't think I've ever consumed whitefish, let alone cod. And my team has and everything, so we're developing well. I don't think it's necessary for everyone to have consumed it. And it's just it never really resonated with me across the board from the I think that's just a profoundly deep ethical just my intuition just it didn't strike the proper chord. From a health reason to the health of the planet. I was an activist as a teenager too, couldn't really explain why it kind of went in that direction when it wasn't in my family and let alone in my community. For that matter, I lived in a very staunchly conservative Republican area. And not to say I was like the opposite of that. I was an activist on kind of key points, right? So on climate or those areas. And so it's really hard to say. It just never resonated with me. Some say it's definitely like it was a past life decision that just carried over with me strongly, and so I just kind of it feels right that way too.
So did it start with lobster and that was it? It just changed, or was it a gradual thing?
Seafood was never part of it. My parents just, I was like, nope, no thanks. I would eat around meat, like red meat, most of the time. It just didn't feel right, and then I think the consuming chicken was sort of maybe the last holdout. But even at that point, when I was 14, I probably hadn't been eating it much either. Yeah, and I was an athlete too. I played basketball. So in a like no one around me was vegetarian, let alone yeah. It was a weird. It was such a. It was an alien experience.
But yeah.
So since so sorry, where were you in 2006 then when you went vegan? Was that you were in the US?
So I first moved to Iceland in 2010. So in 2006, I was starting university in Florida. So I was in Florida then. And yeah, I had a very close friend who he was vegan at the time, and didn't compute why I was still eating cheese every once in a while with him. And then once he kind of said it out actually out loud, and I considered it, I was like, oh wow, no one's ever asked me that. And then it just became like an overnight decision essentially.
Yeah, the curtains were lifted from your eyes, and all of a sudden you're like, ah, yeah, that makes
Yeah,
sense.
and that happens often for me. So I don't need a lot of second or third kind of, when something is in my face and I kind of see either about like my own behaviors or actions or that then it's kind of a quick turning on.
Okay, so what's the vegan scene like in Iceland? Obviously we had Aldis on, and she mentioned there's a few restaurants and the big supermarket. I want to say Brudin, No, not pudding. That's
that's not vegan. Vegan Buddhin.
Okay, but close.
But yeah, which it direct translation of this is just easier. Direct translation is just vegan store.
Oh wow! Okay, store. Simple as that.
Yeah, simple as that. It's not difficult. So I would say, you know, when I moved, so the first moved here in 2010, the word vegan just I was. Explanation I had to explain it and again and again and again and again, and now it's like I don't need to explain the word. And so that was I moved out, my kids and I we the family moved out in 2011 time frame, 11 12, then we moved back 2015, and we, you know, we visit every once in a while. My kids are Icelandic too, and so we moved back in 2015. There was a kind of a shift at that time. And then from 2015 to 2017, 18, it was really this big like burst and acceleration. And then we have this, you know, we have the vegan community. It's like a Facebook group in Iceland. It's quite massive now. I'm not sure how many thousands of people, but when you know there's only 370,000 people,
yeah.
And when you get to, I should know the exact number, but it's highly active. But if you think about the vegan store, so Vegan Buden, it is the world's largest fully vegan retail store, grocery store. And so when you understand that it's quite a prosperous nation, highly educated, when you understand that, and then you kind of have to think that the consumption understanding of and knowledge of veganism vegan products must be very high to kind of foster that. Mm-hmm. And when you go to the grocery stores here, it all makes sense, right? So if you go to the store or if you go to restaurants, to vast majority, you could go to a steakhouse and they have options. And actually I think the second or third top rated restaurant in Iceland is called Mama Reykjavik, or Mama Cafe, not just more Mama for short, and they're entirely plant-based.
That's incredible.
And so that's like, yeah, so it's like,
it must be like kind of a big fishing community, I guess, Iceland as a whole, for that to be changing at that level is just fantastic, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, you know, I always consider Iceland is a place of extremes, and so, you know, obviously we have right now we're all manic, and the results of the mania because it's like essentially never ending sunlight. In the winter, and in the winter we have the inverse of that. So we have it's just dark all the time, and the weather is kind of similar in many ways, though it doesn't get too warm here. And but then also, if you kind of think about it in terms of, so in 2008 in the crisis, Iceland was the hardest hit economy in modern economic history, and relative to its size. And so it was actually one of the first hit and then hardest hit. And then it was actually the first to recover, and it recovered like the greatest, essentially, almost. And in COVID, it was sort of a similar, like we were kind of the first, one of the first hit, and it spread like wildfire super fast. But then it was also, we were also one of the first to get out, like collectively as a community of people on the island, as a nation. Like we haven't been, like face masks have not been a thing now for at least 2 years. Mm. Right. Wow. They weren't highly adopted for most of it. And so what I like to say is it's sort of a canary in the coal mine for the rhythms of the West. And so we see it here, where we have this like dueling, is really this duality of I would say more ethical, healthy, high consciousness modernity setting in and kind of making its swift adjustments and changes to the rhythms of the past that aren't really serving the current status, let alone the future. And so we see that now, like the predominant, one of the predominant discussions this summer has been on whaling, right? Because essentially just one, it's just one dude that's doing it, and he loses money every single time. And the only reason he, like the sale of it, actually just the predominant sale of it actually goes to just to, I don't know if this is still true, but it used to be high-end dog food from Japan. And, you know, and then occasionally tourists in Iceland. And it's, you know, I was kind of like barking up this tree since I first came here of like, why is this still allowed? And it just doesn't make sense. Then also when you have probably the greatest per capita consumers of one of the highest per capita consumers of veganism, it's just like, it's just a staunch comparison to destroy the largest mammal on the planet with almost pride and financial loss too at the same time. It's just, it must be washing some type of money there. And then this summer it was the parliament, Althingi, it was highly debated, and it was kind of split 50-50. 3 years ago it wasn't 50-50. It would be probably like, I don't know what it was, but it definitely was not 50-50. And then the minister of the appropriate ministry just put a halt to it, suspended it for this until the end of August, which is the whole season, right? So that's never been, I don't think that's ever been done. And so there's been just a lot of activism and a lot of pushing. And so we kind of see this, you know, this cleansing, I should say, of habits, behaviors, and ways of thinking that haven't been serving it. Culture. Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of progress in a very short amount of time.
Oh yeah.
That's
yeah,
incredible. Yeah.
I'm proud of this little nation.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's magic. You mentioned you should know the number of vegans that there are in Iceland. I went there about 6 years ago for a trip, and we went in a restaurant, and I wasn't vegan at the time, but we went in a restaurant and they had the population on the wall, and every now and again a bell would ring and they would change the number. Yeah. I think maybe one of the vegan restaurants needs to do that. When there's every time there's a new vegan, ring the bell and add the number.
It's actually a super clever idea. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'm going to send that in.
Yeah, you should. So I can actually just pull it up now. So I'm not sure where the info is, but there are 24,000 members of the Vegan Iceland Facebook group.
What?
So I'm not sure how many are actually vegan, but that means at least they're vegan friendly. Because usually if people are kind of bashing it, then they're kicked out. So I would say it's a pretty high marker of vegans and friends of vegans.
That's about 6.5% of the whole population. I say about, I just did it on my calculator. But that's a huge percentage.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It is.
Maybe Iceland is going to be our vegan utopia, Wes.
Maybe. I've always wanted to go there. So maybe that's the calling.
Yeah, that's I think so. You'll have a blast here. Yeah.
We'll add it to the list of dates for our world tour.
Yeah. That keeps getting mentioned now, like it's going to happen.
Well, I figure if we mention it enough, it's a bit like in Wayne's World 2. If you build it, they will come. If we keep talking about it, people will start booking.
Manifest it.
Yeah, that's right. That works. That's it.
So, Chris, when you went vegan, then what was your biggest struggle, like from when you first started properly to throughout the process?
The biggest struggle has always been, it's been on my end. Well, yeah, it's been on my everything is usually on our end, right? Everything is a mirror for our own internal states. My biggest one was the energy required to consistently answer the why are you vegan question.
Oh yeah.
Because for me, you know, it's the understanding of how to get my diet to where I want to and being in tune to what I may need. That's been easy. Of course there's been at times, this is regardless of any type of dietary preference, right? You have to adjust yourself according to your changing needs. Yeah. So it was never that. It was never options. I mean, moved to Iceland, and there just really were not a lot of intentional options. Obviously, what most people consume on a daily basis is essentially vegan, anyways. So I'm not going to say that there weren't any options, because that's not true. There were options. But it was an adjustment when I moved to Iceland. So 2010, I had to sort of adjust, not just from coming from the products that exist in America for just food in general. I had to adjust to what exists in this Nordic Euro Anglo or American Anglo kind of hybrid, because we get products from all over those areas. But the biggest one was always having to explain it and the why for it, because my reasons for being vegan go very profoundly subtle and esoteric, but they're also very, you know, so it's from health, sustainability, the ethics of it obviously are profoundly, profoundly deep, and then also aligns with sort of my more esoteric views, which are aligned with my kind of Buddhist path, which are, you know, not really probably par for the course in this discussion. And so the reasons for it are just almost endless. And so depending on the person I'm talking to, you really have to get sensitive to, you know, this, you have to get sensitive to what will resonate with this other person, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that was honestly, it's just, it is so much so that from about 2014 until 2020, I just actually didn't talk about it much. I lumped it to like three things together, right? It's the three things you have to be careful talking about, like religion, politics, and the food you eat, and being vegan, right? And,
that's a good shout, actually.
Yeah.
That does make sense. Yeah. It's an amazingly touchy subject, because people will always ask you, well, why are you vegan? But then they don't really want to know the answer, do they?
No, they don't.
They want to know the answer so they can argue with you.
Yeah. Mm. But they get offended when you tell them.
Like, yeah. I had a mentor once that gave me this when I sat at a meditation retreat once. But at the end, she, you know, you go through this integration because you're going back to society, and it's quite weird, because it is quite weird here. And she said people are gonna be curious, but you just start with like the basic statement of like, oh, how was it? She's like, it was great, and most people will stop at that, right? Those that kind of, so you kind of, you know, give just a little bit, and that little bit, then you can kind of get the sense of maybe how to steer the conversation into something that is amicable and one conducive to learning on both sides, rather than just having to, you know, grin, bite, and work through each other's triggers too much, where no one's really learning, you know.
That's a good show. I like that. Okay. So when you went vegan then, you mentioned that, did you say your mum is vegan now?
She went vegan about 4 years ago. Yeah.
Magic. Okay. So when you first went vegan then, what did your friends and family think about it?
So when I went vegan, it's actually kind of difficult to recall what the response was. My family was my family, my nuclear family and my extended family were just all, I didn't really come up against any friction. You know, I had to explain, you know, that certain things are still animals that they didn't know, you know, for whatever reason, I guess grateful I still don't receive backlash for my decisions. I think people just know that when I make a decision of something, that they can just feel the conviction. And because usually if things used to be when I was a little bit more open to aggressively debating, there was no the stubbornness just didn't allow others to feel like their view was being swayed. I'm sure that was an aspect of it too. It's just all around, I'd say, pretty good support.
That's good. That's really good.
So did anything change for you, like physically or mentally? Did you notice, was there anything noticeable that you thought?
Yeah, you know, physically, I just had, I think it just, had a lot more energy, and I would say energetically, I was yeah, I was much more consistent, which also makes, my mind became sharper. I believe, like, my personal beliefs is that I believe that the universe, us, kind of, you can kind of feel it, like there's a reward for not harming and having good intentions and good views. And so one of that is, if you're either mindlessly or mindfully consuming another life, or another sentient being, I don't think that a person's, especially in the face of all this information and climate change and everything, I don't think a person has the strongest of sound minds there. Just to be completely honest there. So I think my, and I can actually see this through many friends who've slowly either became vegetarian or became vegan, or just, became vegetarian, that they just started having a more healthy view of the world. And so they're like actually kind of noticed, like, there's more consistent mind, more consistent energy. And so I would say it's probably the same, but I did make the switch at such a young age that it's a bit hard to, now I'm, mid 30s, and it's, if I'm sure if I made the switch now, I'd really know, a single father with two kids in his mid 30s switching to vegan probably just gets like a blast of energy,
Yeah, you would definitely notice that. Okay, right, here's a key bingo question for you. One of the ones that is probably part of the biggest struggle that you've had of being a vegan. Where do you get your protein and other nutrients?
I like to eat whole food. I like to eat as organic as possible. It's one of the things I'm not cheap about. My protein, I would say, comes from a lot of beans. A lot of beans. I will supplement every once in a while with a protein powder. Not as much as I used to, but I was, because I like to keep it sort of, red lentils, beans, many different types of nuts, legumes, just kind of all of it. I like to round it out too. So I don't actually like to plan meals ahead of time too far, because I think that's sort of, that's really a little bit irrational and counterintuitive to sort of how just life is, right? And so our diet needs to be, we need to be in tune to kind of what our gut needs. And so I just try to opt for a certain profile of things.
There's nothing better than a hunk of prime Labrador steak, wonderfully marbled. And that is almost entirely dependent on how it's produced. Elwood's Organic Dog Meat has complete control of this entire journey. So I'm here at Elwood's Farm to find out a little more about it.
Welcome to Elwood Farms.
Thank you very much, Elwood.
I hear you do a bit of barbecuing.
I do a little bit of barbecuing every now and then, yes.
From a chef's point of view, consistency is key for everything.
It doesn't matter if it's a Rottweiler ribeye, a Pyrenees mince, or a lab sirloin.
You can always tell when the dog comes from a place where it was well reared. And every step has to be right, doesn't it? Oh, you should see these guys. So, from an Elwood's point of view, there's complete traceability.
Absolutely. Unrivaled traceability, so it's fine.
Every single piece of dog meat.
Yeah, from pup to farmer's market.
Everything the dog's been fed.
Everything about it.
For each dog?
Yeah. Only Marks and Spencer's and Whole Foods do this.
Where else can people order from?
From elwooddogmeat.com. That's ELWOOD. Dogmeat.com.
For top quality meat from dogs for people, meat that's local, sustainable, and humanely harvested, there's only Elwood's Organic Dog Meat.
They seem pretty friendly, don't they? It's more responsive to me than my kids, to be honest.
What's the best thing about being vegan?
Superiority? I'm kidding. No.
Whatever you say after this, I'm just going to edit out, just to let you know.
The best thing about being vegan, I don't know. It's really hard to say. I've never really thought of that.
That's why we ask it. There's a lot of there's always a lot of talk about how difficult it is and how much a struggle it is, especially when you're talking to people who still eat animals. It's like, what do you miss and what do you wish you could still eat and all that sort of thing. But no one ever really asks you what's the best bit.
Yeah. You know, I think there are, obviously it's not a blanket statement statement, but nor is it like just a direct one-for-one correlation, but there are certain things health-wise, physical health-wise, I just know I'm not gonna have to worry about. You know, I'm gonna have to worry about things, of course, but and not to say that all vegan food is healthy, as we know that's not the case at all, right? But I think that is one, you know, like certain things of, I don't know, like cholesterol, my cholesterol levels.
Yeah.
You know, as long as I'm, you know, I just can't imagine how that would go awry. Of course, you know, I don't want it to sound like a blanket statement, but that's one. I would say that's a big one. And also I feel, you know, there are so many shifts going on, and there are going to be even more shifts that I gave a fireside chat talk with the head of sustainability from Oatly about 2 months ago here in Iceland.
Wow.
And one of the questions that was asked was essentially, you know, our view of what of how to go about solving the climate and environmental crisis. And for me, this is nothing but an individual journey, because whether or not you're going to adopt anything, because it's, you know, it's a collection of individuals making changes to then cause a shift, right? So it has to be sort of an internal yoga, right? To change and adapt. And so for me, it's one where I'm like, well, I'm basically already there with one of the biggest things that could make a dent for a person. You know, of course, there's things I need to improve upon, you know, and I know them. And, you know, from plastic use to food waste to all those things, you know, but the stride that you have to do, you know, you get such a biggest bang for the buck by stop eating animals, flesh and byproducts. It's just like, and you know, that's one where it's like an obvious reward from the planet, or for one of the most conscientious decisions you could make, right?
Yeah. I'll say this to a lot of people, and they come at me with arguments that we can't change what businesses do. We can't change the industry carbon footprint, and we can't all afford electric cars, but we can individually do this. And by doing that, you personally are making a big difference. You're not going to change thousands of people, but you doing that one thing for you is making a difference.
That's right. You know, for me, I've already solved the climate environmental disaster.
Yeah.
You know, within me, you know, and I, you know, I'm raising two children who at this stage, like they connect to it. Like they've barring a rare exception. And I don't think that even applies to my son. I'm struggling to think even for my daughter, who's the oldest, they've never consumed animals. You know, they're not vegan, because their mother and I have, you know, she's vegetarian. But with me, they eat that. And so when I talk about they eat vegan, so when I'm talking to them about this, you know, to hear it from a 9-year-old and 11-year-old that like they're sitting next to their classmates in school, and they just can't even visualize how someone could eat it, eat an animal, eat another. And so, yeah, so for them, they're, you know, to have that kind of, it's just, you know.
100%. I have the thought sometimes that when the human race no longer exists, whether we're still here or not, when that happens, I know I've done my bit. I'm going to be part of that no longer existing thing, knowing that I did what I could.
Yeah. Right on. Mm-hmm.
That's it. Okay. So apart from Loki Foods Whitefish, what's your favorite vegan product at the moment?
Ooh. So are you talking like a alternative or you know,
whatever you like. Right. We've had a huge range of things from shoes to chickpeas. Whatever.
Yeah. We had a whole conversation on chickpeas that episode.
Yeah, it was a
okay.
Thing. Yeah,
it deserves it. It's a plant that deserves a lot of love and appreciation. That's ooh. You know, I do say time and again that, you know, my favorite is me being vegan, it sort of predates all these alternative options. And so I actually had to sort of learn how to eat these alternatives.
Okay.
And so I spent some time like really kind of getting excited about them. And now I'm kind of back to what I was before, and sort of my favorite vegan food, if I'm gonna think about food, is like, you know, a bowl of dal or curry. You know, it's just like that just kind of does it for me. You know, and I would say my kind of my Achilles heel is certainly peanut butter. So I would say that's up there. But yeah, I appreciate I say like kind of like a sweet spot of things that are vegan are maybe even if I don't like to consume them or have them or enjoy them, but it's certainly ones I reflect on popularized, adopted, well known in culture, but are consumed by a lot of people, but are unbeknownst to the consumer, accidentally vegan.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite because those are the ones where people are like, oh, what? You know, and you're like, yeah, in fact, you know.
Yeah. Gotcha. So, got you. Yeah, got, caught yeah, you. Kinda, caught gotcha. You enjoying something vegan. Ha.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if somebody came to you saying they wanted to go vegan, what advice would you give them?
I would say it's too. But first, it's good to understand if they want to make the switch quick or slow. But the first advice that I usually say is, you know, just kind of start small. Don't flood your system with trying to make changes or. Some years ago, I made a decision to just not consciously eat gluten for some time, just to kind of measure the effects it had on my body. And I actually had a mold exposure during that time too. So I think the gluten was driving some weird reactions. And so when I made that decision, even having been vegan, it was sort of a lot. Like in a kind of overnight, I almost didn't even like, I had like a, you know, kind of like a go to the grocery store and I was like at a freeze. And I was like, what do I do? Like, I can't do this. I had to go to three different stores to compose a meal that I'd normally make, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just, you know, I would say it's to start small because you know, it's important that people stay on the path to it, and that if that path is ultimately being only plant-based, then that's incredible. And but the best, you know, I know there's a lot of research that shows that like cold turkey is usually the best approach. But for a lot of people, you know, cold turkey is sort of a, you know, it comes after failing so many times. And I think with going vegan, a lot of people that, oh, I tried being vegan once and it didn't work. You know, it's, I don't hear a lot of stories about people trying to be vegan, not being vegan for a bit, trying again, not being vegan, because it's not like it's a, some type of, you know, it's not like alcohol or something if you have a problem with it. Though it is at a levels at which we know, of course, because we want people to stick to it. And so I would say is just, you know, start small, start with just milk, or start with milk, you know, start with red meats, you know, make those shifts there. And then, you know, just reduce your intake and transition. And then also I would say is to I to kind of say this to anyone that kind of talks about their diet is just to just be more in tune to your body and supplement, you know, and ideally supplement with food, like whole food, organic food, clean food. But if you're going to go in the options of supplements, then, you know, opt for the ones that are have more natural, more of the natural derivatives rather than the synthetic version, you know, like folic acid, don't do that, you know, consume more folate, especially if you're a man, which I don't know if most people know this, but that secludes a lot of, or precludes people from actually consuming a lot of nutritional yeast products that are out there, because most nutritional yeast products out there are artificially fortified with folic acid, and folic acid has been linked to high rates of prostate cancer. And so you want to consume ones that are actually have folate, which is the natural derivative. Folic acid is a synthetic version. And actually, with all these, a lot of these synthetic versions, like the body just doesn't know what to do with it. And again, this is independent of being vegan, right? So I would say start small, you know, piecemeal, because it's a big thing. Like we put animals in a lot of things that just don't make sense. Don't make sense.
Wes is panicking now because in the introduction before you joined us, Chris, he talked about putting a load of nutritional yeast on his dinner this evening.
Okay. You know, the thing is that there I've noticed this shift. Sorry for this, man. But I've noticed this shift. I'm triggered. But I've noticed this shift over the last few years with nutritional yeast, because it's, you know, it's if you're vegan and you don't have nutritional yeast in your house and
Are you even
you're missing
vegan?
out. Yeah, you're missing out. And but I've seen a shift in nutritional, even in Iceland. Before we only had maybe in the grocery stores here like one or two options for nutritional yeast, and they all were artificially fortified. And so I actually ordered mine online to get one that was not, right? The bacteria were essentially select, because it's through, you know, essentially through fermentation or bacterial growth on molasses, I believe. I think it's just molasses, I'm not sure. To have a certain nutritional profile. And so there are now ones that are just, I mean, it's like it's beyond a superfood. So the options are there. And of course, if you're in continental anywhere and you're not on an island in the North Atlantic, you'll probably have access to it pretty cheaply.
I'll have to check now.
Yeah,
Go check and then find out if I'm
yeah.
using the right stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find that things are more expensive? I mean, Iceland is, well, a lot of the sort of Scandinavian Nordic countries are notoriously expensive for just about everything, aren't they? But do you find that Iceland is more expensive for vegan products compared to elsewhere?
Yes. I would say when you look at this, like this, just straight meat substitutes, I'm not seeing a huge difference anymore. You know, this whole, and then also if we get into the discussion of price parity, you know, our products ourselves, they're going to be also affordable. And so we depending on the market in the region, like we want to launch with price parity from the get-go. And so that's how we believe that's doable. Or if not, get there pretty quick. But I would say things are, you know, and here, you know, we have a high food tax, and we have to import everything, and usually importing stuff requires a bunch of middlemen, you know, and so everyone has to have their cut.
That's it, yeah.
And so yeah, we I would say it is a bit more, yeah, it's a bit more.
Okay. Yeah. But then no more than the rest of as other things that you get in Iceland, I guess. Like you say, you most things have to be imported there, don't
Yeah. You know,
they?
we
Yeah.
make up in a few, in strange places, you know, like
You
electricity,
don't
for
pay anything for
instance.
electricity, yeah. Okay.
Pretty much, you know,
Or
it's like
very
we have
much,
a
yeah.
it's a yeah, it's 100% renewable energy on the electric grid. What that means is, you know, our it's coming from geothermal and hydro. And so, you know, electric bill is like I have a 140 square meter house, two kids, and I have an electric car, and my bill is probably, I don't know, 50, 60 bucks a month, something like that. So, we make up for it in other areas. Too bad
Yes.
but you can't, you know, you can't eat electricity. So
Yeah.
don't feel too disgruntled with that.
It's vegan electricity as well,
Yeah, for
because
adult,
not all
yeah.
electricity is, as I found out not that long ago, bizarrely. Some of it's made from burning
Oh,
some.
right.
I'm gonna get it wrong, but I think it's some meat byproduct, some animal byproduct. They burn it and get electricity from it.
That makes sense.
Oh dear.
I feel like I've heard this before. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not the official line. I don't think that I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I've read that somewhere, but don't quote me on it. Okay. So, who's your vegan inspiration, if you have one?
That's it. That's a really good one. I miss his name is escaping me at the moment. So I'm gonna talk about like recent inspiration. Just because I think I could go on and on about who because I you know I'm in a plant I you know I work in plant-based meat sector, and so I meet people that are you know like us, and so they're going really up against the just a lot of things. So oh yeah, there we go. I would say definitely it's Joey Armstrong, just by far. I only recently discovered him, and I've actually learned a lot through his just like unflailing devotion to just like unflinching just direction with conversing with people. You know, he doesn't care if they're getting triggered
No.
because I believe that he's come to this point of understanding that a trigger is essentially just pain being felt, and pain is where we learn, you know. And
It's
so he
incredible, isn't
under
it?
I believe he just has un he either consciously understands or he has consciously understood at some point that it's besides the point if someone gets triggered. If you're triggering someone, then you're probably getting to to the heart of the issue. And so I've actually learned through that, through kind of watching him for the last months, to just kind of the importance of that, because you know we're all kind of doing our part to speak up for the voiceless. And he does it in a way at which is incredibly admirable. It is incredibly admirable. So I really hope the best for him, and that he just keeps making headway there, and he just keeps up with that unfailing devotion, which I think he obviously will at this point.
Yeah, he
Interesting.
does well, doesn't he? He does really well, particularly when those people are coming back at him. He just doesn't, like you say, he just doesn't, he does care, but he doesn't care, if you know what I mean. He just goes on, doesn't he?
Yeah. And you can see it with his eyes. You can see it with his eyes that his like the whatever energy is in the room or in the conversation is irrelevant. It's irrelevant because there are, you know, billions of animals enslaved at the moment, and they can't be there to speak up. And so I just, you know, I know that the planet will keep supporting and rewarding him, which will only benefit us all. Yeah. So I've learned a lot from him. So I had a great deal of appreciation for that, for him and what he's doing.
Absolutely. He does great work.
So do you have a favorite vegan restaurant do you go to at the minute or not?
Yeah. Yeah, I have two here in Reykjavik. Number one is called Mama, M-A-M-A. And they're, you know, the, I think they're the third highest rated restaurant in general on TripAdvisor in Reykjavik. And it's just incredible food. They don't use meat substitutes. If they do, it's very, very rare. So they just focus on wholesome dishes. And it's also like a community restaurant too. So you go in and you just kind of feel like you're walking into family in many ways. So it's a very, you know, you can feel the resonance there. And then another one is called The Garden, but it's in Icelandic, is Gardurinn, Gardurinn. And they have very similar type of food. As you can see, my rhythm there is food that doesn't necessarily have replacements in it, maybe besides like dairy, of course.
Okay, so the final question, and this kind of links into some of the struggles that Wes and I have had and several of our guests have had with how things are in the world around people not being vegan, not enough people being vegan or on the road to being vegan. Do you have hope for the future?
I'm an eternal optimist. I feel like if, you know, we've had the atom bomb for decades and we still haven't blown ourselves up completely. I believe we're in this is how I view it. Because I've been thinking about this in relation to potentially a greater doom rather than just an impending doom, but a greater doom, because we obviously are experiencing one, is that we are living in a luxury period. Even though if you look at the actual figures around it, it doesn't feel like it. It just doesn't, but our species is one of high creativity and intelligence. And if you actually look at the financial aspect, like the financial cost to truly solving this climate and environmental disaster, it's actually still less than I believe this is the figures that I heard, but it's still less than the US military defense budget in 1 year. And we're talking that's globally. So an aspect of that obviously has to be is reducing the reliance on consuming animals. So we're in this luxury period because, you know, between these 40, 45 degrees Celsius summer days and rising, you know, aggressively rising ocean levels, floods, you know, the average human isn't having to reflect on it on a daily basis yet. And I believe that the planet itself obviously will keep turning up. Right now it's been like trying to get us to pay attention. And some of us are listening, and obviously the rise of veganism is a reflection of that. People are listening. But it won't be at a level at which I hope it won't get past a luxury point. But I do believe we will solve this. And an aspect of that solution, or the many solutions, will be plant-based fermentation and cell-based inputs to the food, cosmetics, pharmaceuticals, everything, to remove animals from the supply chain. that's just the future. And obviously there will probably always, at least on this planet, there'll always be a market or some type of some type of market for you know, for consuming animals, but I believe it's just going to be on a totally different scale. Going to be, you know, it's going to be small farm based, it's you know, so I'm an eternal optimist. I believe we're still in a luxury period, and which is crazy to say that, but I do believe if it comes to the point of nearing sheer destruction of our species, that there will be a snapping in place and we'll just get it solved, kind of like we did with COVID. I believe it firmly. Yeah.
Or Thanos will come along and snap his fingers.
Yeah, let's hope it's a it's a different Thanos.
Let's go with your one. Let's go with your one. That sounds better. Fantastic. Sorry, where's gone?
You said keep our fingers crossed.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Keep our fingers crossed.
You know, yes. And don't you know, don't waver, and you know, don't shy away from the conversations. You know, I did that for too long, and you know, this is again to mention Joey. This is what one of the things that I made a decision before it is if someone wants to have a conversation, I'm gonna have the conversation. Because what other point is there in life to speak up for us and for those that are enslaved, born, bred, just to be slaughtered and consumed, when, you know, and so for me, I think that's just kind of, eternal optimist.
Yeah.
We didn't pick the easy roles, you know, but, someone's got to do it.
Yeah,
that's it. If not us,
then who? Yep.
That's it. So it kind of goes back to what you said earlier, Wes, as well. Like, we're doing our bit. That's what we're doing. We're doing what we can. Not only are we not taking part in it, but we're also telling other people why we're not taking part in it.
Yeah.
That's the key thing. Yes. Oh. Okay. Awesome. Thanks so much, Chris. That's been absolutely fantastic. We wish you all the best with the launch of your new product. We can't wait to see it over here in the UK.
100%. Awesome. Yeah. Soon, hopefully. Thanks a lot, guys. And thanks for doing this. Thanks for the courage of you know, coming from the grassroots to build something. It's not easy, you know, but just keep on it, and you'll see that it could just bring consistency, energy, take breaks when you need to, but you'll see that, you know, it's rewarded, and that means, you know, more less animals hopefully being consumed, right, which should be the biggest reward for us.
Yeah, absolutely, that's the goal, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the goal. What is it they say? Until every cage is empty. Ah,
he's lovely.
What a nice chat. What a lovely chat.
No, it was good, that. I like that.
Yeah, you've got to go and check how much folic acid is in your nutritional yeast.
Yeah, I have to do that. Yeah.
Your face when he said that was a picture. It's a shame that it's an audio-only podcast.
The fact that I'd said it in the intro, I was like, I wasn't even going to bother saying that, but I thought, you know, It's Nuke. Everybody likes Nuke, you know. God.
You know, sometimes we do the intro after we've done the episode. Not often now, but sometimes we do. And this is one of those occasions when it is almost set up. Like, you knew he was going to talk about it. That was hilarious. Anyway, all good fun.
I want to go to Iceland. I've always wanted to go to Iceland.
I'm probably going to go to Iceland,
but I think I just want to move there.
The romantic part of me thinks it would be an amazing place to live, but the realistic part of me thinks It's going to be fucking cold.
I'm all right with that.
You're fine with cold, aren't you? But, yeah. I mean, it's just the bits I've seen, it's beautiful and it's, yeah, it's just, it's a great place.
Yeah. I'll never know. I don't think I'll ever get there.
You will. It's got no trees.
If we manage a world tour, then that's stop one.
Okay, that's it. We're announcing it. If you've got an arena, how big does the arena need to be, Wes?
Village hall.
A village hall. If you've got a village hall in Reykjavik and you want to put us on for a gig, all we'll charge is flights and accommodation.
Yeah.
And as much as we can spend in the vegan store.
Yes.
That's it. That's all we need. And a big coat.
A really big coat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's all we need. Yeah, if you wanna put us up and put us on in a village hall in Reykjavik, then drop us an email. Who should they send that to, Wes?
I'd say they should send that to howiveganpodcast@gmail.com. Or alternatively, they could just get in touch on social media, couldn't they?
Yeah, why not? Why not? That sounds good.
So thank you all for listening, as always. Go like, subscribe, share with all your friends, particularly the non-vegan ones, to pick them up, really.
yes.
Obviously, you know, the vegans amongst us, we already know all this.
Yeah, but we still want you to listen. Don't just
still want you to listen. You know, yeah, listen more than listen. I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. give us a review. That's always nice.
Yeah. Subscribe, rate.
All the good stuff. All the good.
Yeah. All the good stuff. None of the bad stuff.
Yeah. Thank you ever so much. It's been a pleasure as always. And yeah. See you next time.
Cheerio.